Commencement, the Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education by Kate Colbert and Joe Sallustio with contributions by Elvin Freites is now available for pre-order on Amazon. Get your Kindle edition or your softbound book. It's going to be
amazing.
Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallustio back with you again in another episode as this might be 500, I don't know, but we're getting close to 500. Thank you for those of you that have been listening on this incredible journey, 2.5 years of the Ed Up Experience podcast. And as many of you know, we are taking over 100 interviews with college and university presidents, and we're writing a book called Commencement, the Beginning of a New Era in Higher Education. It's up on Amazon for pre-order now. If you do us the honor of pre-ordering the book, we're going to deliver. We're going to make sure we deliver here in mid-October when the book releases. We are writing fast and furious, and we've got a lot going on. And you know what? As I've said before on many episodes of this podcast, I am booked every single day to do a podcast episode every single day now until mid-January. That's how far out we're booking. So if you're listening to this and you're a future guest, you miss the episode, you got to go to the back of the line. And I'm so sorry for that, but I have only time to do one episode a day. And that's because I have a regular job that I love and, you know, I got to fit in all this stuff. Anyway, we're going to have a good conversation today. And I've brought back somebody's voice who you heard before. She knows a lot about a lot of things. She's Dr. Amardeep Kalan, and she is Dean at Unity College. Amardeep, what's happening?
Oh, all well, Joe. Thank you for calling me back. This is a great podcast, and I always enjoy listening to the guests here. I learned so much. And
you honor me. Thank you. That's very nice of you. I mean, you know, I love having you. I'm like, Amardeep, can you do this? And you're like, oh, I'm busy. Amardeep, can you do this one? Oh, I'm busy. But today, I got you. You're here. And we have an exciting guest with us that's going to tell us all about what he has going on. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen. Let me make sure I got, see what happened yesterday? I didn't have my applause thing working, so it didn't work. And I was like, my guests, I was going, here's introducing so-and-so, and then there'd be this quiet moment when I listened back to it because my applause didn't work, but let me see if it works now. Here he is, ladies and gentlemen, Dave McCool, president and CEO of Muzzy Lane. Dave, what's going on?
Lots going on. Great to be here today. Looking forward to talking to you both.
Muzzy Lane. It sounds like it could be a super awesome movie. You know, or a super awesome ed tech company. What do you guys do at Muzzy Lane? Level set for us. What is it that you do and how do you do it?
So we've been around for about 20 years, in the education space, always in the realm of game-based learning and simulations, you know, looking to create more interactive, more engaging online courseware. And our focus the last few years has really been on skills, skill development, skill assessment, and skill credentialing. Do that through partnering with online course creators, publishers, universities, and do that both for leveling up sort of traditional undergraduate courses and also increasingly working on micro-credential pathways. So for people who aren't in a traditional bachelor's program and are looking to get validation of their skills.
By the way, Dave, when I told you before we started recording that I have sound effects for everything, I did not tell you, and this is common, that they come 3 seconds late sometimes because I got to find the right button. You did say level up, and I hit it, but I had to find it anyway. Okay, so simulations is the word that I picked out of everything that you said. Game-based learning and simulations.
Yep.
Dive deep into that a minute for me. What does this look like? Paint a picture for me of what Muzzy Lane does or can do. For skill development and simulations?
Sure. So there's a variety of different sort of, we call them templates, different types of simulations that people can build on our platform. One of the most popular ones is branching role play. So you're gonna take a role in a situation, context is gonna be set for you, you're gonna have other computer-driven characters you're interacting with or possibly other students, and you're gonna problem solve. You're gonna do some sort of cognitive rehearsal. For example, you might be working at a supermarket and trying to evaluate a flyer from a competitive store and decide if was that effective? Should you do that program in your store? A lot of work we've been doing lately is in 21st century and soft skills. So trying to get you to exercise your critical thinking, your creative problem solving, communication skills. And then there are other types. There are things that are more like turn-based simulations, more like a business simulation, for example.
Okay, so this is interesting. This is the kind of stuff where people say, what is the future of higher education going to look like? And you go, simulations. And, you know, I was interviewing Paul LeBlanc from Southern New Hampshire, Dr. Paul LeBlanc from Southern New Hampshire University. One of the things we got into talking about, we were talking about grades. And I know Amardeep's got all sorts of thoughts around this, and I'll give it to you in a second here, Amardeep. But we were talking about grades and how grades are not an accurate representation of learning and how you learn and whether you've learned effectively. And we brought up video games. I think I admitted in the episode that I am a video gamer, much to the dismay of my wife sometimes, but I like to play video games. And a gamer will sit there, and when they fail, they will try again and over and over and over and eventually master that level, and days go by and they can go right back to that level and pass it again because they've now passed it once. They've truly learned through it, which is what makes gamification and simulation so important to the learning process. That was a really fascinating conversation with him. That sounds like kind of what you're talking about, is this complementary or supplementary, depending on how you partner with higher ed, of how to make learning more effective and more interactive.
Absolutely. And I think there's two parts to it that you kind of touched on there. There's the development of skill, where you want to, like you say, if you're failing, you're trying again. It's not important that you got to what grade you got. What's important is that you got to the mastery of the skill, like you ultimately got to that point. And then there's assessment, where you want to actually, we're used a lot in summative assessment at the end of courses to make sure the skills have been learned. And like I said, then they often get credentialed directly.
Amardeep, you know a lot about this. What do you got to say over here?
Oh, I think the repetitive part, I am not a fan of grades, Joe. And Dave, it sounds like you aren't either. Grades test you at that one moment in time. I love the idea of repetitive, repeating a task repetitively till you master it, because mastery is what you're after.
Yes.
That's what you want. You know, if you don't have mastery, you can sit through a class for whatever, 16 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 1 week, whatever your length of class is, and learn nothing out of it. Right. So I love the idea that you have simulations, which is very, really important in the online world today, because not everybody wants to go to a brick and mortar place anymore.
More don't. Right
now. Right. And not everybody wants to read a text. You don't learn much by reading a text. So how do you bring that hands-on experience? How do you get them to get their hands dirty without getting their hands dirty? And simulations are a great way to do that. I just want to ask you, what in the future are you thinking of VR, XR, those kind of things, involving them in your simulations? What do you think of that in the future of education? And also in the tie that with accessibility, equity, and all of those issues.
Yeah, those are good points.
We like when Amardeep asks like five questions at once, Dave.
Yeah, so right. That was... knocking down. I know, I'm supposed to keep answers short, so that's going to be a little challenging this time. We in our custom work, we've done a lot of 3D avatar-based stuff, kind of metaverse-y type stuff. We've not doing as much of that right now. We do have a very big focus on accessibility and equity. It's really important that these simulations are accessible to all learners. They run on any device. They meet, WCAG accessibility requirements, and they're affordable. And so the focus has really been much more sort of in-browser web-based simulations today. But I see it growing back into the VR, AR. Certainly on the corporate training side, you're already seeing, I think, the adoption has gone further down the track so far than traditional K-20 education. But I think that's coming as well.
Are you partnering more with business and industry for simulations, or more with universities for learning? Like, because I imagine I've been through really bad simulations. Like, there's the corporate training stuff that it's like, here's a cartoon and you said this and now you got to go answer the question, why is there demand for Muzzy Lane in the corporate world, and is that where more of your clients are?
There is significant demand there. Traditionally, we've been mostly in the K-20 space, really helping kind of in that sort of envelope of a course and trying to improve that course, whether it's from an engagement standpoint or authentic assessment. But increasingly, as we sort of move towards individual skill assessing and credentialing, there's a big demand for that, both in the corporate space and in the consumer space. A lot of people just want to go and credential the skills they have so they can start using that on their resume to get a better job or put it on LinkedIn. And in the corporate space, you're seeing a lot of internal pathways in corporations, so changing over to being credential driven. So instead of me saying, hey, Joe, I think you're pretty good at your job, I'm going to promote you, Instead, there's sort of an internal company place you could go and take some courses, short courses, get some credentials. And once you have these five credentials, you're now eligible for that promotion. So I think there's going to be a demand there.
Amardeep?
What are some major differences you see in the two markets when you're trying to serve the two markets? Do you think they're aiming towards the same goal, or do you see higher ed still stuck in more traditional ways and corporate going ahead to more non-traditional?
I think packaging delivery is one difference. You know, you're more structured with starts and ends in the education side, whereas corporate training tends to be a little more continuous learning driven. You know, we were at the ATD conference back in the spring, and there were 15 simulation vendors on the floor. You know, you don't see that many at a traditional higher ed conference. But they're trying to do these sort of libraries of content to give you that constant upskilling capability, where you don't see it as much yet in higher ed, but I think it's moving in that direction.
And Joe, can I ask one more?
You can do whatever you want. I bring you here to, you get to take over anytime you want.
Tell me, since I come from the world of competency-based education, I'm a huge fan of CBE for all the reasons we've just talked about.
Yeah.
What role does that play in when you develop your content, or is that a separate line of your content?
You know, we've always used backward design to develop the content. We always think about what are the outcomes that you're looking for, and you work back from those, which is very much, I think, a competency mastery view of things. You know, what do I want to know you can do when you finish this experience, and then how do we work back? You know, what challenges can we put into the experience to test whether you can do those things? I think the terminology is interesting because it feels like skills is sort of starting to take over from all those, you know, competency mastery, learning objectives, learning outcomes. Skill seems to be that one universal if you can apply it to any market and any learner.
What do you think? So that's an interesting point because, you know, that's been happening a lot. And when we talk through what higher education is, what it will be, how we experience it, and there's this skill stacking, skill development, micro-credentials, you know, give me something quick, let me go out and learn. Maybe I'll come back later and get my degree. And then I have a question about Muzzy Lane and how that fits into how higher ed is using the product. Like, you know, is it being used? And here's my question. All that sounded like it was me a question, but I'm really getting to the point here. The point is, if I'm implementing this simulation where I can practice, is it off to the side before I go take this test or go take this assessment within my course where I get a grade? Is it a complement to what the course is already doing? Or is Muzzy Lane leading to me doing better in the course and performing better in the course? Like how is it being used, I guess, is the ultimate question I'm being asked, asking.
Yeah, I think mostly the latter. You know, our goal, so we have basically authoring tools that instructional designers and subject matter experts can use to build these simulations with our help or without. But usually they're an instructional designer, they're designing a course, they're saying, okay, here's where I need experiential experiences, or here's where I need some authentic assessment. They build on our platform, they use LTI, which is a standard to link us into their learning management system. So we're very much part of the course design in that model. So for Excelsior, for example, they have an 8-week World War I history course. And each of the eight weeks is capstoned with a simulation that you play as a student. And that was very much intentionally designed into the flow.
You know, I was looking through your partners. You know, there's always this, whenever we bring ed tech companies on or we talk to founders, it's like, you know, who's using this thing? And you look through the partners and you're like, okay, Western Governors, Arizona State, CSU Global. You mean some of the biggest online universities in the country. What do they know? What do they know, Dave, that the rest of us haven't figured out?
Simulations have had a funny history. You know, some people, no one debates their value. I think there's been a cost and kind of a logistics of deployment challenge that has happened over time. Certainly we saw that back in the day. Western Governors is interesting in that they are explicitly a competency-based university, and they have kind of a simulation imperative for most of their colleges and courses. And so that was a pretty easy fit with them. But a lot of our work in the last few years has been really to try to lower those barriers, make it easier to build, easier to integrate, easier to deploy.
Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education by Kate Colbert and Joe Sallustio with contributions by Elvin Freitas is now available for pre-order on Amazon. Get your Kindle edition or your softbound book. It's going to be
amazing.
If sorry, Amardeep, I'm taking over. Now I'm taking over and I see you're going to retake over. Go for it.
No, I was going to follow on to your question, Joe, is that, do you see when you're talking, when you're out talking to different schools, do you see still that there is a bias against simulations?
I don't think so. No. If you think about barriers, what we most often run into is that they don't have the bandwidth internally to build, deploy, select simulations and upgrade their course designs. You know, a lot of these people, they tend to be on, like, say, a 3-year cycle, for example. And if the course isn't up for redesign at that moment, they just don't have any bandwidth to go do that. And so, but we don't see much hesitation. If you use the word game, you still get kind of a mixed reaction. Mm-hmm. Simulations doesn't seem to have that.
Quick follow-up question. Do you have a library of simulations that somebody can pull from if they become your customer, let's say, instead of designing their own or having you design from scratch? Do you have a source library?
Yeah, so two answers to that. One is, so our largest partner in the higher ed space is McGraw-Hill. They're deployed across, I think, about 75 course areas now in higher ed. They have a library that they've made available of simulations they've built, and it's called the Application-Based Activity Library. So anyone can go, any higher ed institution can contact them, and they can give them demos and they can adopt that. And of course, I think it's maybe 40 course areas that are available for license. We are just starting to build our own content library as well, with the initial focus really being on 21st century skills. You know, the work with Education Design Lab, they have a full curriculum and a taxonomy around those skills. We're helping them automate the assessments so that they can be more efficiently delivered. And then we're gonna make that content available for license as well.
How's your business grown and expanded? You know, COVID obviously was probably something that helped the business. I mean, whenever I say COVID it helped, I feel like we're actually putting it that way. But you know what I mean? It was an accelerator probably for your business, and like it was for a change in higher education. One of the most interesting parts of higher ed these days is, and we see it, my university and others, is many of your on-ground students are taking online courses. And so you're not just dealing with online universities and online courses, you're dealing with ground courses that offer an online component. And then how do you make sure that those courses are designed the right way for learning and not just plopped in, an on-ground course that's plopped into the online environment? Have you seen that expansion for your business take place in multiple ways, like online university over here or hybrid university over there? Or what has it been like?
Yeah, I think short answer is we've grown quite a lot over the course of the last few years. We've been growing basically usage 100% year over year for 4 years now. We've served over a million students. We've delivered over 11 million simulations. So it's kind of fun for me. In our early custom days, like 10,000 was a lot. Now, you know, 11 million is kind of hard to get your head around, but it's been great. And it's an interesting mix because a lot of our direct business is, as you saw on our website, is with the big online universities where they work directly with us. And that's a pure online model. I'd say most of who's getting served through McGraw-Hill's content that they've built are hybrid. I mean, they go to everybody. And so we see a pretty good mix from them as well.
That's pretty cool. Let me come back to the whole gaming point. When you say gaming, you get a mixed reaction. But when you say simulation, you don't get that reaction. I mean, the whole gamification concept is built around having a simulation, right? Or having some kind of simulated environment where you achieve. Why do you think gaming is still giving that kickback?
I think two things. It's funny you use the word gamification a couple of times. So for a lot of people, gamification means a regular activity, like a test or a book, with game rewards and game elements, incentive elements around it, but it's not fundamentally a different core activity. And most people think that's not a good thing. A game or a sim, those are pretty interchangeable, I think, from what they are. You know, there's some active activity where you're taking an active role and you're making choices and dealing with consequences and trying to achieve a goal. I think when you use the word game, it's just in some segments, it's still considered frivolous. It's considered, not serious enough. And they used to call them serious games, which was really kind of a bad phrase. But we've just found the simulation is the easiest way to get the point across, I guess.
Amardeep, you want to keep? I'll keep going. I'm gonna crush Dave with questions if you don't.
No,
stop
go for it.
Yeah. You when we talk about practice, right? And I think Allen Iverson. I don't know if you remember Allen Iverson. We don't need no practice. You know, we don't need practice, but just put me in the game. Practice is a really critical component, and a lot of times we don't give students the ability to have the tools to practice. So what is studying? What is practice? So what it is in the online environment? Even textbooks are moving. I always think the jumbo shrimp, the oxymoron, the best oxymoron within higher education is my online course where I have to buy physical books. I always feel like that's the ultimate thing, right? So OER and all those things are moving in that direction. How do you do this at scale, Dave? How do you, you know, because some of these universities that you're working with are large. If you add in programs, right, you think about adding Muzzy Lane is a component to a program or to a class. And if you're talking classes, there could be hundreds, if not hundreds of thousands of classes that would benefit from something like this. How do you make sure that you can deliver at scale?
I think to start with the question about practice. So authentic practice is super valuable and everyone agrees with that. It's difficult to do for complex skills scalably. Like you need a human, like I need someone to help me practice a skill like that. I think one of the big promises of simulations is through artificial intelligence, they can kind of mimic that procedure. So I can put you in a simulation where artificial intelligence driven characters who can create that kind of those kinds of practice opportunities for me, which are much more authentic than just reading about something or watching a video of someone else doing it. And then the scalability, that's the fun part, right? That's trying to reach, you know, those hundreds and thousands of courses. You know, when we ended our relationship with McGraw 3 years ago now, I think their goal is to bring this to their entire higher ed catalog, which I think is 400 course areas and then probably multiple courses per course area. But that's the mission.
Amardeep, over to you.
Yeah, in your experience, so we've talked about the big universities and you've talked about Education Design Lab, which is now doing some amazing work with community colleges. What has been your experience with this being adopted at the community college level? Because when we are talking about the skills gap, et cetera, they are at the forefront of filling the skills gap. So what has been that experience?
They are. And so, again, through the McGraw-Hill relationship, a lot of community colleges do use our product. But the EDL relationship is interesting because it's a different approach. It's saying, look, a lot of those students who went to community colleges or go to community colleges, they need credentials for skills. They need the directly credential. Maybe it's prior learning assessment where they already have these skills from early work experience or the military. They need a credential for those skills. And so EDL does a lot of work with the community colleges to help them put, you know, non-degree programs in place that will help them really go directly at those, focus in on those skills, you know, make sure they can show that they have them, get a credential for them, and then have that feed into the increasingly automated hiring process so they don't get weeded out.
Dave, how long does it take to make a simulation? Like, is that a correct way of asking something that I'm not even sure how to ask about? Like, you know,
no, it's a good question. You know, in the olden days, in the custom days, you know, to, you know, 12 to 18 months, especially since, you know, you'd have to test and do things like that. Most of the experiences that are built on our platform today are somewhere between 5 and 30 minute experiences for students. And, you know, you'll have a skeleton up and running in a day or two. Again, the whole goal is no code authoring tools, WYSIWYG editor, get in there quickly, structure what you're going to build. And then you might spend a week or two refining it, doing the scoring, doing the feedback, so kind of a week or two.
Fantastic.
The reason I asked that, Amardeep, I'm sorry, I saw you're ready to jump in, but I asked that is because we know, and a lot of the narrative around serving adult populations is you better have a pretty aggressive curriculum updating schedule or update your curriculum as often as the business world is dictating the skills that the students need to come out with. And if you're on a 2-year cycle or a 3-year cycle, the business is moving too fast now with technology. Your curriculum's out of date almost over a year. So how can you take something that exists and without having to redo the whole thing, augment it and make it more relevant? And I look at something like Mozilla and say, that's how you can do it. I can take this shell, I can take this curriculum, maybe it's aged, and I can bring in simulations to update the experience, to update the content, to update the way my student experiences that content without having to go deep into a giant curriculum review and updating schedule, but I can do it with select components. You see that is that a big part of what you're doing, or do you have schools talk to you about that?
Yeah, big focus for us is you know, it's a pure SaaS model. So they author on our platform, they publish on our platform, and then we deliver directly to students on our platform. So the idea was to keep maintenance and upgrades really easy and quick. So if you know, if there's a spelling error, you can quickly change that and push that change out instantly. If you, like you said, if you want to update your feedback, update your skills, update your terminology that you're using, it's super easy to just go in, make the change, save it, test it, republish it, and push it out to the students that you want to push it out to. So that's a big part of the appeal.
Yeah, speed is important, right? I talk about that all the time. Like, how do you run at the speed of business and the speed of technology? And higher ed is historically slow, and students are beginning to question whether there's value in the time that it takes to get through a higher education or the time that it takes to get through a course. How do you make it more real life? How do you make it? And simulations is one way to do that, because you can simulate anything to some degree or another, right? You can simulate any kind of situation, any kind of learning block. Amardeep, go ahead. I'm talking too much.
No. It's your show, Joe.
I know. No, I'm sorry. If you give me a microphone and no interruption, I'm going to go the whole 45 minutes and not even ask a question.
I want to ask you a question about theory and practice. So your simulation is done in the classroom. It's basically not the real world, even though as real world as you make it. Have you done any, or have your customers done any research on how well those students transition to the working world with those simulations, and how well they perform in the working world with that?
That's a really good point. So we don't have direct data on school to work transition. We do have a few partners who've done studies on practicing skills to the assessment of those skills. So for example, one partner did a make versus buy simulation, and they had historical data for that part of their final. And they did an A/B test where they had certain students go through that make versus buy simulation experience before the final. And their pass rate on that part of the final went up by like 37%. So it was a dramatic difference from the historical data they had. Another partner used it as part of an orientation program, kind of behavior change, trying to, go through this. They have an orientation program that they have data that says students are far more likely to stick if they go through it than if they don't, but they have trouble getting people to go through it. So they built a simulation that talked about walked them through the benefits of that. And then that shot up their participation. Education Design Lab is doing validation studies right now in the work we're doing together in the 21st Century Skills. So I think that'll be some good concrete stuff that'll be coming out probably later this year, or early next year.
Dave, I love this bit on your website under your mission, where it says, "We seek to replace static linear content with dynamic immersive content that allows learners to get inside the real life skills they need to master." I'm like, you know how many people are talking about this right now in higher education, how we do that, how you stay business relevant? It's good to know that Muzzy Lane is out there. How do we contact you? How would any of our listeners who are interested contact you? And what did we not say about Muzzy Lane that you'd like to say today that we didn't ask?
Sure. So contact wise, muzzylane.com is our website. Author.muzzylane.com is the service. We do offer free accounts for people who want to kick the tires and try it out. And I'm on LinkedIn, so that's usually my preferred, and Twitter as well. What we didn't touch on today, I think that we traditionally have done, like I said, we've done a lot of work with individual simulations in higher ed. When we look forward, the two things we're really excited about are working with Education Design Lab to build a library of 21st century skills-based content, which will be available to whoever wants to license that. But we're also adding an ability to bundle up a sequence of these practice and assessment simulations into a short skills-based course. And we're kind of excited about that. That will credential you directly. So you'll be able to go, either come to us or go to one of our partner distribution sites, take a course that's very active and skills-based. It's not, watching videos and reading PDFs and taking multiple choice tests, but it's a series of sim challenges. And you'll get a credential at the end of that's going to help you get a better job.
God, how much more exciting does that sound if I could go back in time and go through any of my degrees with sim challenges instead of the PDFs and all that stuff? I mean, that's what the future of learning is, right? And Dave, that leads me to my question for you, our final question of the episode, which is, what does the future of higher education look like?
The unbundling of education has been a buzzword or a buzz phrase for a while now. I think it spreads from this single path that everyone kind of walks. Either you walk the path or you don't participate at all. It's going to spread to many more different pathways for people. We're going to have the degrees, but we're seeing people who now just want to go get a set of credentials that are really focused on what they need to do and what they want to do in life. But we're also seeing in the degree programs, credentials getting added in. So you go through a digital marketing course and you'll get a digital advertising credential as part of that part of your degree. So whether you get to the bachelor's or not, you have that extra credential that says, hey, I can do this thing really well. And if you're looking for that, I'm your person.
I love that. Amardeep, any final words about Muzzy Lane or future of higher ed?
No, you started out with the name of Muzzy Lane. I'm curious about the name, because when I hear the name, it makes me think of this English street with flowers on either side.
You're right. Now that you say that, I see it too. Yeah.
Yeah, those of us who started the company live in Newburyport on a street that used to be called Muzzy's Lane back in the 1700s. And this was back in the 90s when everybody was looking for a domain name for the next company and grabbing it. So we grabbed that at the time. And we thought it was a cool name. It was easy to remember how to spell, and had a history angle to it, which is we were all very much historians. So
that's awesome. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My, of course, my beautiful and amazing co-host, she's Dr. Amardeep Kanwar, and she's Dean at Unity College. You'll hear her again because I'll always invite her back because I like her so much. And my guest today, ladies and gentlemen, he's Dave McCool. He's president and CEO of Muzzy Lane. Dave, thanks for coming on the EdUp Experience today. Did you have a good EdUp Experience?
I had a great EdUp Experience, and I appreciate both of you, and thanks for the opportunity.
Ladies Thank and gentlemen, you have just EdUpped. Commencement, the beginning of a new era in higher education by Kate Colbert and Joe Sallustio with contributions by Elvin Freites is now available for pre-order on Amazon. Get your Kindle edition or your softbound book. It's going to be
amazing.